Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Their websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show and Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you, Jim.
Is this going to be a happy new year for investors and just the regular everyday consumer?
Well, I think that the themes for 2023, if you look top down, are probably inflation in a downtrend. So I do think there's going to be relief in terms of many consumer prices. We're just seeing a lot higher inventory levels this year than we did last year. You know, there's all kinds of shipping containers have come back down in terms of the cost to move goods is now back below where it was at the start of the pandemic. That's good stuff. You know, the price of oil has come off significantly from where it peaked. So that on top of a lot of other inputs as well, and just the massive overhang of inventory, which I've mentioned before in many things, and we've seen a retrenchment. You know, PC shipments have dropped 20% in the third quarter of 2022. The amount of goods purchased, I mean, the full retail sales data is not yet available for through the end of December, but in many things that we can measure, it seems that consumer demand is just falling across the board. So I think ultimately that will help consumers in the sense of lower prices. So that's a good theme. And, you know, the challenge there is more to do with rising unemployment in 23 and how that impacts the consumer. And that could be quite a negative for some people. Obviously, you know, during a recession, job loss cycle, you know, it's at the margin. You don't see everyone lose their job, of course. But we are seeing like a reduced work week already, less overtime, that sort of thing. So people's incomes are still, you know, not increasing nearly as much as the cost of living. So that's an ongoing challenge in 2023. But I do think that we've seen the peak of inflation this cycle, and we have in fact seen things like, you know, as I said, commodity prices and the yields on government bonds peaked in around October. You know, they peaked in June, then they sold off and then rallied again into October. And since then, we saw yields falling. So I think that trend will continue in 23, at least on the high quality bond stuff, on the government and the highest quality corporate debt. But of course, the default cycle is picking up here. So this means that we're seeing a lot more distress, not just in the highly levered consumers, which took on too much debt during the low rate era, but also in a lot of corporations that borrowed too much during the low rate era. So I think, you know, again, depending on where you sit in this spectrum of financial strength, I do think that the weaker companies are going to continue to struggle in 23, because even though I say that yields have peaked in October and they're now on the downstroke, I think that the Fed and the central banks of the world are going to probably, you know, maybe hike a little bit more, but probably pause, potentially, I think, by, say, March of the first quarter of 23. And what I don't think they're going to do quickly is move to cutting rates again. And so, you know, we have this steeply inverted yield curves all over the world. And we know for sure that you don't get, on average, the lag between the peak in treasury yields and the stock market low is about 12 months. So if I'm saying the peak in yields was October of 22, one of the themes I think we're going to see in 23 is this ongoing bear market that began in 21, and began in 22. In 21, actually, for some, some of the big tech names peaked in the, you know, the last quarter of 21. So we've could potentially see that continue into the fall of 23, which would be, you know, a 2-year decline for that. And we definitely have seen 2-year decline cycles in past bear markets, certainly in when the tech bubble burst in 2000. You know, we saw a bear market that continued into 02. And the same thing happened in the 73-74 with back-to-back negative return years of like negative 25 and 26% for stocks. So I do think that that's another theme. So for the extent that people have equities already in their portfolios and they already experienced, you know, the average portfolio was off, average retail portfolio was off 35% in 22. That was one of the worst returns for overall on an annual basis in many, many, many decades, right? So that was a negative year, but it is also likely that we could continue to see that in 2023. And I think that the next phase of this, as I say, is stocks falling because of the earnings disappointment. So we had the first part of the bear market, which was because interest rates were hiked so quickly and the rate shock really hit the world and caused bonds to sell off steeply, and that deeply inverted the yield curve. Okay, that's fine. Now I think what we're going to see is, you know, the second part of the decline in stocks is this repricing of earnings. Because if you look into 23, analysts are still expecting positive earnings growth for S&P 500 companies, for example, of about 4% into 2023. In reality, in a recession, you get a 20 to 25% decline in earnings. And if you get that kind of decline in earnings, you know, that's going to hurt sentiment. And any kind of contraction in sentiment means a contraction in the price people are willing to pay for those earnings, which translates to something like, I mean, even with the declines of 2022, the thing is that we have, you know, still the most expensive stocks relative to things like earnings that we have seen since the 2007 market top, 2000 market top. So we're still up in rarefied air of bubble territory. And so that kind of a compression, you could see that priced earnings on, for example, a Case-Shiller, which is sort of a smoothed average over 10 years of earnings. We could see that compression come down from, you know, above 25 to something like 13, and that would mean probably another 25% down for U.S. stocks and potentially more for Canadian stocks because, of course, we've been lagging in this down cycle so far. We fared better in 2022, relatively speaking, because we have that late cycle exposure to resources, oil and gas. But as that comes off in a global recession, and we've already seen energy-producing companies come off about 22%, Canadian energy-producing companies are off about 22% from the peak, and the oil price, as I say, coming down. So I think all those things together, when you ask, you know, is 2023 going to be a good year or a bad year, it really depends on what you're holding in terms of your current exposure. If you're holding, you know, things like bonds, high-quality bonds and cash, well, you know, your prices are going to be going up on the bonds very likely, and the yield you're making on your cash is now the highest since 2007, Jim, and we went through a decade where cash was paying you almost nothing. So that's a huge help, and that will buoy returns for portfolios. And then the opportunity, as I say, could be really significant, like a nice cyclical low in terms of prices when you go to deploy capital, if you are able to preserve it, into things like dividend-paying equities. And that could be, you know, the latter half of 2023 or early 24 that opportunity materializes. And that would be, you know, pretty exciting stuff.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, what's your view on Canadian real estate?
So I guess that's another theme definitely that's likely to be front and center in 2023. And again, if you're a buyer looking to buy, the good news is prices are coming down. If you're a renter looking to rent, the good news is rents are coming under pressure, thankfully, because they were really high and unaffordable. And that bubble jump during the 20 to 22 period really made a bad situation even worse. So that part of those looking to buy or those looking to rent are likely to find more favorable pricing. And that's a good thing, really good thing. For those that are holding, real estate, for example, your house, if it's paid for and you can afford to, pay the bills, or even better, if you have a basement rental or something where people are paying you to live in your house, that's all extremely favorable. And, so the prices are obviously, the notional value went up a lot in the 20 to 22 period, and it's coming off now, and you're likely to see a decline. But for the majority of people that own their house, that's really neither here nor there. If they're intending to stay there long term, not a big deal. But it's really, again, for those that were speculating with a lot of leverage in the bubble pricing era. Of course, this is going to be a very challenging period, because not only have mortgage rates leapt, but also, buying has dropped enormously. The U.S. mortgage applications, for example, are down 70% year over year. That's the lowest level since January of 1997. And the similar statistics in Canada, where people are just not, at all able to get financing, even where they want to buy properties. So there is a mounting amount of inventory available, just as new supply is coming on stream, right? There was a lot of properties, both multi-unit rental properties as well as single-family home properties and condos that were built and underway during the bubble phase of this cycle that are now coming to market and finding that, people are not wanting to complete those transactions or just can't get the financing to do so. So, and the more interesting part, which, I've mentioned this before, but I don't think people appreciate it significantly. I can't tell you how many people assured me in the last couple of years that luxury home sales never will come down or prices won't come down because, quote, rich people have the money. I've heard that so many times, but of course, I've been around the block a few times, Jim, and I've heard that in past decades as well, and it's never the truth. Investor buying has contracted by about 30% just in the third quarter of 2022. Luxury home sales down about 30% year over year. Manhattan property prices are off year over year. So it's the very expensive properties which are really seeing, of course, a dearth of buying interest. And those are the people that, so far the homeowner losses to date are about four times as much as stockholders lost in the bear market of 2022, because, two-thirds of the population in Canada and America own a house, and more than own the stock market, for example. And, of course, it's such a highly levered instrument. If you have like a 3% down is an FHA guaranteed mortgage in the United States, just 3% down is required, just kind of like our government guaranteed or CMHC guaranteed mortgages in Canada with, 5 or 10% down. And those are like, huge leveraged bets that can evaporate that equity really quickly if prices move just a small amount to the negative. Of course, that's exactly what's happening. So again, I think in the long run, this is exactly what we need. It was completely unsustainable. It's important that prices reconnect with income and ability of people, and young people in particular, to enter the home market, as well as reconnect with rents, so that it makes sense to be an investor in the space again, for example, to purchase properties that you can rent out to people with a reasonable margin of profit over the, between your expenses to manage or hold the property and the rent that's paid, so you have enough for capital improvements and all that good stuff. That's what makes something an investment, of course, and that's what's been so lacking during the speculative mania of the past couple of years.
Now, the Canadian Real Estate Association has stopped including the most expensive homes in its stats about average Canadian home prices or median prices. How deceptive is that? Are they trying to make the situation look better than it really is?
Well, I'm not exactly sure of the story you're referencing there, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's adjustments to benchmarks. That's pretty typical when you get to the end of a major bubble period and things start to go south. You know, there's a lot of impetus for the officials or the regulators in a particular area to start looking at different measurements. You know, certainly the central banks have done that over the years, and so I wouldn't be surprised. I think there's a lot of realtors that are caught offside. I know there is, because they too were believing their own pitch, so to speak. A lot of them didn't appreciate the cyclical nature and the magnitude of the bubble that has been. A lot of them were doing things like leveraging themselves multiple times over on multiple properties and options on condos that were not yet complete, and hoping to flip contracts before having to complete at a profit and all that. So there was a lot of that going on. We see a lot of, for example, you know, realtors looking for people to take over their expensive car leases and all sorts of things. So I, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people in the space were, let's say, masquerading as experts without any expertise. And so they too have been taken off guard, and there's a lot of compression in that industry. But there was an enormous amount of people who went into, quote, real estate for lack of anything more compelling to do, in the past several years, and a lot of them will be now looking for other sectors to migrate to as well.
Danielle, anything else you think we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, I guess, you know, again, I think it's really important to, before you decide that something is cheap, I think there's a lot of, you know, nearsightedness in this. And before you decide that an asset has come down a lot or is cheap, I think you should always look at the price relative to where it was before the pandemic. So look at 2019 levels and see where we are relative to that. And if you do that, because you're sort of, what you're doing there is smoothing out the incredible fiscal and monetary surge that inflated things so grotesquely during the pandemic. If you can sort of use that pre-pandemic baseline as your measuring stick, I think you'll be amazed that even with the declines that have happened, things are still, for the most part, quite a lot overvalued. That's the case with housing. It's the case with many of the shares that have come off significantly. You know, even like things like Apple, which everybody has always been so in love with in the last few years, as a share, it's off 30%, but it's still up significantly from the market bottom in, for example, March of 2020. And my thesis, you know, our thesis in our analysis and work for the past couple of years is that that March 20 rebound was a false bottom, and that we should expect a lot of things to retest the price lows that we saw there. Some of them may indeed hold. We won't know until we get to see that retest. But a lot of things are still significantly above that test, or have not yet confirmed whether, you know, it's going to hold there or make a lower low. So, you know, a lot of the prior darlings, like the Teslas of the world, as I've been pointing out, you know, the fundamentals of that company have been incredibly strong in the past few years, and the shares are now off more than 70% from their peak, but they're still up more than 250% from where they were at the bottom of March in 20. And the same with things like Apple. I think we could see as much as twice the decline that we've have to date on that. You know, so it's just making sure that you appreciate the scope and scale of what we've been through, the mania that was, and what mean reversion has to do on many of these assets to restore the long-term average. And, of course, mean reversion being one of the most reliable and consistent laws in financial history.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Counsel Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.